Annoy people on the quiet car and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 305, McMonagle here with you on the fan. 888-808-1019. We can get to the game, obviously, as well, where the... Yeah. I like it. The New York Yankees obviously took care of business and avoided disaster and managed to win a series against Chicago. And let's just start there for a half a second before we get into the game, because I think my man Rami on the other side tweeted that there is no series victory against the White Sox, that losing any game is losing the series.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I disagree. The Yankees now played the White Sox six times. They won five. If five out of six against any major league team ever in the history, I don't care who it is, that's good enough for me. All right, listen, would I like to sweep? Sure. Did they have an opportunity to win that game? Was it embarrassing? Yes. They won five of six. Do you know the Cleveland Guardians are 5-5 against them? Like, the idea that they can't lose a game to the White Sox out of six. You know what? That's what are you on pace for? Like, that's what the White Sox are on pace for. As bad as they are, it's not like they did any better against the Yankees. They're 1-5. That's what? 10-50? That's 20-100? That's 30-150. That's what they're on pace for. That's how bad they are. So first off, right there, they avoided disaster. It is okay to take 2 of 3 from the White Sox. And quite honestly, I thought they played well. The middle of their order hit, and they played tremendous defense. That didn't look like a sloppy, bungling team that just, you know, craps all over themselves on a nightly basis. I don't know if Grady Sizemore's got him playing better, but obviously he made an impossibly dumb decision to walk Soto in front of Judge. I couldn't believe it. I know there was first base open. It sets up the double play. Like, a lot of reasons to do it. If Judge was a normal human being, he is not. I never thought I'd see the day. And you could honestly see Judge was pissed. But the Yankees do get the win. Judge hits his 300th home run. Soto gets the game going with a home run. And really, Will Warren pitched a solid game for them after having two bad starts. Was actually, you know, pretty good. He had the sinker moving pretty well. He's got that kind of, you know, he's that kind of sinker slider type guy where you don't expect him to be dominant. He's a middle of the rotation guy at best. But he gave you a reasonable performance. You got a little news early before the game that it sounds like Jazz Chisholm, hopefully they're optimistic. Now, they were optimistic he would play the next day after Monday night, so who knows about optimism anymore. But it sounds like there is a chance at least, and they're going to give it that chance. My guess is no matter what, he's going to rehab this thing for a few weeks and see how he feels. So there's a chance the season might not be lost for Jazz Chisholm, which would be a huge bonus for them. But watching this game, and this game turned around as the offense was sputtering and Soto's home run was it. And even Judge was having a bad game with two strikeouts early on. And the offense doing absolutely nothing and Volpe not coming through and Verdugo being bad. And, you know, both Judge and Soto walking in one inning and it led absolutely nowhere, which is always frustrating. To start an inning, Soto and Judge walking back-to-back first and second, nobody out. And Wells laces a, you know, fly ball right to the left fielder, and the inning is over. So it was a frustrating night until Oswaldo Cabrera. And let's just talk about Oswaldo Cabrera for a second, because there's no doubt the turning point of this game is when Oswaldo Cabrera leads off, was it the 7th or the 6th? I forget which. The 7th inning, I believe. The 7th inning. The 7th inning with a base hit. Steals second base, which I thought was a hit and run. I don't know if anybody asked that in the postgame. Again, once these games end, I run over here, I get a chance to see the postgame. It takes me an hour and a half to get here. I don't know if anybody asked Boone, but DJ LeMay, you took such a weird hack at it. I thought maybe it was a hit and run. But he steals second base. And then the play of the game and the play of the series and what turned this thing around was Verdugo actually got into one, hit one into the gap. Fletcher, the right fielder for the White Sox, who was all over the place and played a brilliant, robbed a home run or at least an extra base hit from Grisham later in the game, but he tracks down the ball in the gap, catches it, stumbles a little bit, and Oswaldo Cabrera tags all the way around and scores from second base. The first time the Yankees have done it since 2000. And Jorge Posada. How funny was that when that came about? When we find out that was the last time it happened. But his athleticism and his spark that he provides. Like, last year, he was awful. I was sick and tired of looking at him. He was another failed, kind of one of these middling prospects. He didn't really have a lot of buzz to his name when he came up 2 years ago at the end of the year and played outfield and allowed, you know, pop-up after pop-up to land in shallow left field during the Cleveland Guardian series. But he played somewhat well when he first came up. Last year, he was atrocious. Atrocious. To the point where right-handed, he's been so bad that he's eliminated it practically, and he's strictly a left-handed hitter for the most part. But this year, you can't deny it. At the beginning of the year, it was him and Soto carrying the team while Judge was struggling in the first couple of series. And you can really kind of start this slump. As much as I don't know how great he is or how much he actually will be good if he plays every single day, like, part of me thinks when he's good at this role playing sporadically that you keep it going because he's good at it. But and when he plays every day, he might get exposed. But there's no doubt, right now with Jazz Chisholm on the IL, Oswaldo Cabrera needs to play more because you can kind of link the beginning of the slide to when DJ LeMahieu came back, took over third base from Oswaldo Cabrera and immediately went into his, you know, terrible slump, and the team kind of suffered, and they need a spark. They need some athleticism. That's what Jazz provided. And that's why he was so impactful getting here. Yeah, I know he hit 7 home runs in 3 games or whatever crazy number it was, but like, it was the athleticism. And watching Oswaldo Cabrera play, he needs to play against right-handed pitching. You want to play LeMahieu still against left-handed pitching? You want to do different things against left-handed pitching? I kind of get it. Right-handed pitching, which is most games. Oswaldo Cabrera right now, especially with Jazz, I know they just called up Peraza, and you don't like calling up prospects, especially while they're hot, and not playing them. But Oswaldo Cabrera has shown you enough where he deserves to be in this lineup. And quite honestly, right now, with Verdugo struggling the way he is, lead him off against right-handed pitching. He's got some speed. Right now, he's hitting right-handed pitching. Like, they don't have many good options at leadoff hitter. I understand everybody hates Verdugo. Verdugo led off for the Red Sox 79 times last year. So even the great Alex Cora put Verdugo, the great, wonderful, unbelievable manager, the player whisperer that is Alex Cora. Even he led off Verdugo half the season last year. The Yankees don't have much of a better option, as crazy as that sounds, at leadoff specifically. I'm thinking Oswaldo Cabrera is as good as anything. He needs to be in the lineup. That play changed the game, and it changed how they looked. It changed how they played. Immediately, the floodgates opened. Now, yes, it's the White Sox, and the lousy bullpen of the White Sox might have had something to do with it, but it just felt different the minute that run scored. And he's been an important cog. And it's time right now with Jazz down that he needs to play more. And honestly, you can give Volpe a day too. I know he comes through the double late in this game, but Volpe, especially, like, right, he's 1-for-30 or something. Like, his, when he goes through these slides, his plate discipline goes out the freaking window. He is swinging it. Everything he is, he puts together some terrible at bats. When he's going well, he looks like a dynamic, young, offensive, athletic piece. And when he's going bad, he looks awful. I mean, you want to talk about, I mentioned earlier that when LeMahieu joined the lineup, that's kind of when the slide started. And this is kind of a benefit as much as it also is a negative, considering how bad he's been at times. You can make a direct correlation. This offense plays. How this offense goes when Volpe's going well and when Volpe's going, like, he elongates the lineup. He makes it completely different. He's impactful. He's impactful on the bases. Like, when he's playing well and hot, the Yankees lineup feels completely different than when Volpe is cold. And when I say that's a positive, because it's a positive to have a young player that you brought up here that you gave this chance to be impactful. Like, it's good that as he goes, the team goes in some ways. You just need him to be better. And right now, he's struggling. But they do manage to score some runs. The floodgates open in the 7th and 8th. Judge's 300th home run. Soto continues to be a beast. They actually played, I thought, pretty good defense other than the Grisham misplay in the outfield. And let's talk about another guy who has just been awful. But everybody wants to bring up Dominguez. I'm not bringing up Dominguez and having him take over the Grisham role. Like, Grisham plays once a week, twice a week. I'm not doing that to Dominguez. If they want to bring him up and replace him in left field over Verdugo, I'm okay with it. I don't think they'll do that. I don't think they're ready to do that. And I think the Martian Dominguez just hit his first home run since coming back from the injury. He's been scuffling. So let him get hot and then bring him up. But they needed that win. They get the day off later. They get the day off today. They'll head to Detroit. And they also have the Little League World Series game in Pennsylvania. So it's an important series. They're in first place yet again still as they're keeping up with the Orioles, who won last night as well. They're half a game in first place. They did take 2 of 3. The offense did come alive, and you are aware of who you have in the middle of the lineup. But there's a lot of problems with the bullpen we saw in the series and a lot of problems with this lineup still. And Verdugo's one of them. And right now, the first answer, first order of business, is start playing Oswaldo Cabrera a lot more. 888-808-1019. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on? Dan, how you doing this morning?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm all right. Man, you know, I got a couple, two things I want to talk to you about, but you said something about Cabrera. And shout outs to him, man. You know what? This year, it seems like every time they call his name, and they call his number, whenever he gets on the field, he does something to contribute to something good on the field. And, you know, that a lot of times what happened to him last season was when he was getting those opportunities, he wasn't grabbing them. It seems like now, for some reason or another, this season seems to be when they call his number and he gets to see the field, he does exactly what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, shout out to him. But, you know, what I call to talk about, man, that I cannot believe it. The first point I'm going to get to, I cannot believe it. Even Susan Wolman was sitting there like, you know, you're listening to her, and she was like, you could hear the disbelief in her voice. Like, what are they doing? And everybody asked that question, but it's such a problem now because all the time it was walk Judge. Now you walk Soto to see Judge, and you just woke up another beast. That is like just the craziest thing. I couldn't even believe when I was hearing
somebody would
actually try to do this. Like,
no.
You know, but and then the other point that I wanted to make, yo, I got to keep my fingers crossed and I'm hoping everybody else does because, you know, they're talking around it. And I don't even want to say the bad thing because that was something that happened early in the season and we were all worried about it. And somehow we came out on the positive side of that. Please, man, all the baseball gods, if there's some way that this could just be something small and slight with Jazz and the 10-day that they put him on really does turn out to be something where it's just, you know, he just needs some rest and it is a minor sprain and it's nothing. Please let it be because, you know, right now with the way that things are starting to click and him being, like, not out there, you could just imagine what it would be going on once they're all together and complete. I just feel so good. I hear what you're saying about the Verdugo stuff and all that, things like that, but I feel like it ebbs and flows. Even with Volpe, I just wish, like, just leave him alone. Let him go through his stuff because these are the kinds of things that he goes through and then he pops up again. It's just stuff that's going to happen with him, and you just got to be willing to just take the ride with him and just let it go. But, like, I just hope to goodness, fingers crossed, that Jazz is okay and it's really just like a 10-day thing, you know. Because I told my man it might be a 15 on the IL, and then I heard them say 10. I was like, oh my God, it's even less than I thought. So
yeah,
fingers crossed.
I don't know. Of course, Val, thank you. He's been impactful with the team. They could use. They need him, and it's a bummer that the trade deadline. Listen, I talked about it at the time. I was underwhelmed. I think they did get an impact player in Jazz, and you can't. Like, everyone's like, oh, he's injury prone. He didn't. Like, I hate the injury-prone thing when it's a fluke injury at the plate. Like, yeah, Stan's injury-prone. Stan pulls a hamstring every year. That's different. This was a freak accident. You can't say, like, oh, he's been hurt before. You should have known this. I should have known what? The Yankees should have known what? That he could hurt himself sliding into the plate head first? Like, come on. If this was a hamstring, if this was a quad muscle, if this was, you know, a typical injury, and then you go, okay, yeah, the guy's injury prone. His body tends to do this. Like, this is a fluke injury. But I was underwhelmed by the trade deadline, especially in the bullpen. I thought they should have added more arms. And now, I mean, they added Santos, and now he's gone, which, you know, it makes me laugh a little bit. And this is the and it's not necessarily wrong or unfair. I don't know, but it just makes me laugh how, you know, we go on about it. It's just proof that Brian Cashman can't win. And he's got to get it right. That's it. And we try and like give the reasons why he's wrong. Ultimately, it's just he's got to be right because it makes me laugh. Like everyone's like, oh, why are they playing? Why is he playing Verdugo? I'll tell you why he's playing Verdugo. Because he traded for him and he paid him, and they never admit mistakes. Brian Cashman, New York Yankees, they never admit mistakes. They never move on. They never just acknowledge it's a mistake. I'm like, oh, that's fair, I suppose. And then they cut De Los Santos, and they go, ha, 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 how could you cut this guy? What a joke. You just traded for him. What an embarrassment. Like, okay, well, you can't have it both ways. Like, they never cut anybody. They never admit mistakes, and then they admit a mistake, and you get all over him for admitting a mistake. Here's the point. Don't make mistakes. That's it. He's not allowed to make mistakes. I get it. And that's not to minimize how bad or frustrating the trade deadline was. I agree. I thought it was bad. I came on and killed him after the trade deadline. One arm was not one legitimate arm, and I didn't think anything of Los Santos. I thought Leiter was a decent pickup, and he's got some swing and miss stuff, and his K numbers are up, but he's been brutal. Other than like the first two appearances, he came in. I don't know if it was the first two appearances, but the first two important appearances were both in the 10th inning, and he managed to get out of the 10th inning without giving up a run, his first two real pressure spots. Since then, he's been brutal. He's got an ERA of 6 with the Yankees. So the Yankees made a trade for two relievers. One's got an ERA of 6, and one's already been cut, and they traded for a position player who was unbelievable for them and it seemed to be working out and seemed to be a great, phenomenal trade, and now he's hurt. Like, they could have, everyone wanted him to get Paredes from Tampa Bay. Have you seen his numbers in Chicago? He's been awful since he got traded. The Jazz Chisholm pickup was a tremendous deal. He got hurt. But they needed more. They needed more. And they didn't get it done. And I'm telling you, I firmly believe I said it right after the trade deadline. I think I said it on one of the Friday shows I did with Marash in the afternoon, that you will tell what the Yankees feel about their odds and chances of signing Juan Soto by how they treat the deadline. Because if they firmly believe, right? Now, they don't know if he's going to sign. Don't get me wrong. But if they know that they're not going to give him the money, like if they know they're not going to be in the $500, $550, $600 million range, that they're not even willing to go there, then they would have traded more to make this year for sure. The idea they didn't, the idea that they kept some of their prospects, for me, I think it means that they're going to try and build the team around youth and Juan Soto and Judge. Now, it can't guarantee that they're going to get him, but they know they're going to give it a go. They know it. And I firmly believe that. And there is a clear path to get it done. Mike in Brooklyn, what's up, Mike?
There he is. What's going on, my friend?
What's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing well. Listen, first of all, have a great vacation.
You got it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I want to hear about the backpack soon.
Yeah, I got the Torit backpack. I'm looking forward to see how it works.
Listen, yes. You and Rami have probably the two best stories on the fan. First of all, you with the moose story in Vegas.
Yes.
Then the whole thing like with your dad. Like, I know you lost your dad, and
yeah.
I lost my mom too in a fire, whatever, 49.
Oh,
so.
My God, I'm sorry. Your mother was 49 years old?
Yeah, I'm 52 now.
Yeah,
so, no, but
my father was the same age, 49.
I know. So that's one thing. But the second thing with Rami, he sent in like an email to Craig. Craig responded back to him.
Yeah.
So both you guys working together is like fantastic because both stories are amazing to me. Number one.
Yep.
So
I mean, mine a little more amazing, but you know.
Well,
he wrote a letter. I bumped into someone in an elevator in Vegas. I mean, it's
twice, because the first time you didn't, dude. I listened to you. The first time you didn't take the.
No,
didn't you see him?
No, yeah, but I didn't. It's not like I found him. Like, yeah, I was up the.
And then you got back in the elevator, and then you ran into him again.
I ran into Brian Monzo. I recognized Moose. I'll tell the story real quick. I just graduated or got my certificate from Connecticut School of Broadcasting. And I was going to Vegas with my buddies. And when I got back from Vegas, I was going to start sending out resumes, and they help you, you know, a little bit with job placement, not really placement, but they help you write your resume. You go there, they help you send them out and stuff.
Yep.
So like that was the plan. And so I'm in Vegas on a rooftop bar. The name of the bar was Pure. I forget exactly which hotel it is, but it was Pure on some rooftop bar. And I saw Melusis, and my buddy pointed him out. And I'm like, I'm not gonna bother Moose. Yeah. Like, what am I gonna go say? Like, I feel bad. I'm not gonna bother him. And then I'm like 3 or 4 drinks in, and I was like, where's Melusis? I gotta find him and tell him I'm the future, not Tommy Lugo.
Didn't you like go back to your room or something? Go to the bathroom and then come back?
No, he didn't come back to my room. No. So then I can't find him. So then I'm determined on finding him, can't find him. And I feel dejected that I blew my chance. I don't know why I was stupid not to go say hello earlier. And we're in the elevator exiting, and my buddy almost gets into a fight with Brian Monzo in the elevator. And we cool it down. You know, we better heads prevail. And he's like, you guys sound like you're from New York. Me too. And I said, yeah, we're from New York. He's like, yeah, I'm in sports radio. I said, oh, that's crazy. Melusis is here. He's like, yeah, I'm with him. You want to come meet him? I said, yes. And then we went and met at the Horseshoe Bar and had a couple of drinks. But it wasn't like I didn't walk up to Moose. I didn't tap him on the shoulder and say, hi, I'm Chris. I just graduated Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Please get me a job. Like, I saw him, lost him, and bumped into Brian Monzo in the elevator. And I ended up working for like 8 years every day with Brian Monzo. It's a crazy story.
And then didn't you not go to college because the whole thing, like, were you bad?
Yes. I went to Connecticut School of Broadcasting in Westbury, Long Island. I went to community college because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Yep. My plan was to go to a 4-year school after 2 years of community college. And then my dad got sick, so I stayed home. And then
I listened to you, man.
I know. Look at you. Thank you very much. Yeah. So, but that's the story of my life. Let's move on. Thank you, though. I appreciate it.
All right. But listen, so my Met point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably the only Met fan that I not that I don't want Soto. It's I want a pitcher. I would much rather go for Scooble and Riley Green and trade half the farm than go for directly for Soto, because we have no ace. Why did we? I went to the game. I don't know if you saw my tweets, but I went with my daughter yesterday. She's going back to school. My youngest, 20. She's going back to school on Saturday to Binghamton. Mm-hmm. We went to the game last night. not this night, the night before.
Right.
To Mets A's. First of all, half the section, we had great seats. Half the section is A's fans. We go to the game, we get killed. But we had a great time. But the problem is, why did we get killed? We got Blackburn. We don't have an ace. How many times have I been telling you this? We don't have an ace. I would much rather go for Scooble and Riley Green and give up half the farm and whoever they want, and plus money, I'll take on the buyer's contract, than go for Soto. Between you, it doesn't make sense to me. Why would we go for Soto or Alonso for $1 gazillion when we have no ace?
Well, I mean, you got to go out and get pitching, no doubt. You could do both, but The whole point is you don't want to trade away all of your I mean, that's a tough trade. I mean, and plus just, I mean, I know there was some rumors that he was available at the trade deadline, but I don't know if he definitely is going to be if he's going to be available for trade. You got to, you know, I mean, if that's, if that happens.
Why is it a tough trade? I'm a big guy into, let's give up lottery tickets for a commodity. We have a center fielder or a right fielder for the next 6-7 years, mm-hmm. and an ace. And we don't have an ace or a center or a right fielder right now, right?
Right.
So I don't understand. Like,
yeah,
everybody,
maybe you can get, I mean, theoretically, you can go out and pay for Corbin Burns, and there's your ace.
Yeah, but do you think Corbin Burns, as opposed to trade for...
Yeah, but you make it sound like, yeah, but that takes them wanting to trade him to you. Like, you can't just, like, say, oh, I'll make that trade. Like, you got to call, like, what makes you think Detroit's going to trade them to you?
But do you think that, I don't think that with the new guys that bought over Baltimore, I don't think they're going to get rid of Burns. I don't think he's going to be available by next
year. He's a free agent, though. You're going to be able to talk to him.
I understand that, but you don't think that they're going to lock him up?
I think he's a lot more available than Scooble is.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But Scooble, you got to trade. All you got to do is paid. And trust me, Burns is going to hit the free agent market. If he hasn't already signed a contract, he would have. You know, he's going to. I mean, some of the names in the free agent, like Bieber. I know he's dealing with an injury. I'm trying to think who else. I'm looking at some of the names here. Max Fried is going to be a free agent. Corbett Burns. Walker Buehler is going to be a free agent. Theoretically, Gerrit Cole could be a free agent if he opts out, but even if he opts out, they could give him the 10th year. And I don't know if off the injury in this season he would opt out, but I mean, I think he'd probably still get a lot of money.
The same thing with the Orioles to Corbin Burns, you could say about, like you said about the Yankees to Judge, to Soto. Yeah. They wouldn't trade all that they traded to not keep him.
Right. No, granted, they're going to be in to pay him. I'm just saying, if they offer him more money, the same thing. If the Mets offer him the most money, maybe he takes it. He's more available than Skubal is at the moment. Like, he's talking about trading for ace starting pitchers that are young and controllable, and they didn't get moved to the deadline. The idea that he's just there for the picking, if the Mets say, here, take my two best prospects, they're going to go, okay, here, Skubal. Like, I don't know.
Would you be shocked if the Mariners moved Luis Castillo, considering they owe him a lot of money, and then they still have to pay Wu and Kirby and all
that? They got a lot
of
young pitching that's coming up. They absolutely could move on from that and bring back some young offensive prospects. That's plausible, too. So, there's moves to be made, but, like, right now, you'd rather not have Juan Soto. You want Juan Soto. And I know they don't have an ace, and that's fine. And come postseason time, that's impactful. Over the course of the regular season, it's him and Otani are the two greatest free agents of all time, and I'm including Aaron Judge. Like, let's be totally honest. Otani pitches as well, plus he brings in the international dollars. Like, it's different. And Juan Soto's 26. Juan Soto's going to give you four more years than Aaron Judge did in his prime. He's going to be the biggest free agent of all. It's him and we're going to see back-to-back the two biggest free agents in the history of baseball between Soto and Judge. Soto and last year's Otani. That's it. He impacts your team more than any starting pitcher. It's not close. It's not close. The idea, we don't have an ace. You'll find someone. You're two games out of the wild card without an ace right now. 888 808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you. We'll get into more of the Mets and their victory over the Oakland A's and their spark that they got from Adams rubbing their nose in it. The celebrations were on high level from the Mets as they managed to score some runs and the offense does what it does. And Pete Alonso, four hits, a monster home run. Lindor continues to do what he's doing. And you know who else continues to do what they're doing? You know, quietly, Peterson's having an incredible year. Like, let's be fair. David Peterson has been great. He's 8-1 now. And he's been doing, I think it's out of the 11 starts, something like only two. He's given up more than two runs. He's been really, really good. So, right now, that was a good win. The Mets needed that win. And the offense needs to get rolling because I told you, that's how they win. Unfortunately for them, everybody in front of them is on a little bit of a roll. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Dave, Mark, I see you guys. Mark, especially, hang in there real quick. We'll get to you. I'll be right back right after this break on the Fan.
In any LOD accident, it is important for the officer to take photographs of any defects, injuries, or damage. It is also essential to draft the line of duty report and detail the cause of the accident in the paperwork. Remember, there's a 90-day time limitation to file a claim against a municipality. If any law enforcement member has a question regarding a potential lawsuit, contact Decalator Cohen & DePrisco LLP at PoliceOfficersRightToSue.com or call 1-800-901-1529.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown. Wow, what a catch by the rookie.
Ridiculous.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right. 339, McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888. 808-1019. Let me just finish that. Do you know the best version of this song, Roxanne by the Police? I have to admit, you can call me weird, whatever. I didn't love the whole movie necessarily. I thought it was actually pretty good, but Oh, this is not the, I'm waiting for Roxanne. Okay, so the best version of this song, without question, and maybe you could play it coming back from break next time, but they do a version of this in Moulin Rouge. It's awesome. It's like a, they turn it into like a tango. It's got like a tango feel with an orchestra and a very, the singer is a very raspy, deep kind of voice. It's very, very good. It's completely different. Plus, then Ewan McGregor has like a they, you know, they mash up. They were the original mashup before the Glee Club started doing it on a regular basis. Like Ewan McGregor comes in with a different angle to it. Just like the whole song is phenomenal. If you like Roxanne, check it out. It's I don't want to call it a cover because it's a version for a musical, but it's very, very good. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. So, yeah, the Mets had a very, very good day. Offense awoken. Pete Alonso, who you know, you need to get Pete hot. Plain and simple. Pete needs to get hot. The biggest thing from this game is Pete Alonso, four hits. And Amir, the bomb, the reaching, having a good at-bat, even being fooled a little bit out front and being able to kind of flick a line drive through the middle, taking a hang and breaking ball in and being able to turn it down the line. He had a couple of good at-bats, got a couple hits different ways, including the long bomb of a home run. You need him to get going more than anybody else. They were talking about it on SMY as I was walking in. I just saw on the TV they're talking about, do you need Pete Alonso to carry you? And I thought JJ's right. No, you don't necessarily need him to carry you for long stretches because this offense has been so good up and down. But Pete Alonso's got to be a force in this lineup, man. He just has to be. And again, I'll say this. Joe Torre used to say it. The idea of him having a good season is gone. Like, unless he really just goes on a freaking tear. Which I don't, but like the idea of him having a good Pete Alonso season, it's not going to happen. But you can, from this point on, have an impactful year and help this team win. And if you do get in the playoffs and if you do carry this team to a postseason and then you get a chance to perform in the playoffs, well, you've just resurrected this whole season, your value, the money you can make in the offseason. You carry this team into the playoffs and get hot in the playoffs and hit a bunch of home runs, you're going to make money. Like, it is not, all is not lost for Pete Alonso. I know he's very concerned about this, and it's weighing on him. He still has an opportunity to up his value immensely. He's got to perform, he's got to get this team into the postseason, and he's got to perform in the postseason, and the entire first three quarters of the year will be forgotten. And everybody will talk about how he played down the stretch and in the postseason. That's it. That's what he's got an opportunity to do. And I still believe in this team's opportunity to make the playoffs. I think Peterson has been a revelation. He's been so good this year. I mean, he's been dynamic. He gave you a great start. Now, and Oakland, I know they're a bad team, but they can hit. And I know Rooker was not in the lineup as him and his wife are having a baby. Congratulations to the Rookers. But that's a team that scores runs. That's a team that has a pretty good offense. A team that pounded the Mets the night before. So that's a good pitching performance. And they got Quintana on the mound today, later today, for a big start. You need to win the series. You need to start winning these series. You got Miami coming up. You got to win that series. Like, again, forget the Diamondbacks and forget the Padres. I'm not even looking at them. This is four teams for one spot. Braves, the Mets, the San Francisco Giants, and the Cardinals. That's it. Those are the four teams for one spot. Mark in Rome, Italy. What's going on, Mark?
Yes, sir. C-Mac. How
there you go.
Are you?
Giving a whole new when in Rome, call C-Mac. Giving a whole new
yep,
meaning
of course,
to the term
it's
when
Italy,
in Rome.
Your place.
Yes, sir.
Yep. First of all, congrats to Aaron Judge.
Yes.
Unbelievable. I have two questions for you. Do you think he'll be able to get 63 this year? And also, do you think he'll crack 600 in his career?
he could get 63 in this season. There's still time for it. I would not bank on it. I would not bet on it, considering how much he's being walked, because he's so good all around. Like, it actually, the idea is hitting 330 hurts him, because if he was just a home run hitter, I think teams would be less afraid. But he's just such a good hitter all around that it's
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. So I don't think he gets the 63. I do think he's going to hit, he's going to hit, 58. 50. He's going to be right there at right around 60. And then can he get to 600 in his career? He's halfway there. He's played, this is his eighth season.
Yeah.
I know he's been injury prone. One year was cut in half, less than that because of COVID. I mean, 600, that's a lot of home runs. That's a lot of home runs.
I mean, the real question is how many more of these, high 50 home run seasons does he have left?
Yeah. So, I mean, if he plays, so you said you did the math with Keith Rahme?
I did.
So what'd you guys come up with?
So if he averages, let's say he hits 10 more this year.
Right.
And then
that makes 52, right? 53.
53.
Okay.
But it would get him to 310, right? Okay. And then he averages 40 a year over the next 7 years of the contract. So that's, again, 40 a year. You assume for the first couple of years that'll be on the lower end, right?
Right.
Because he hit 40 even when he was hurt last year.
No, he's going to hit 40. Right. Yeah, if he's healthy, he's hitting 50.
So that's, on the lower end, but you assume the back end of the contract, he'll probably hit 30, 35. That'll get him to 290.
That gets him to the 290
at the end of the 7 years.
7 years. So, yeah, I mean, it's plausible. That's plausible to go.
I
got you 290 plus the 310. Get you to 6. Oh, that gets you to 590?
Sorry, that gets you to 590. Yeah, it'll be 280 plus the 310.
Okay. So, I mean, listen, it's possible. I'm sorry, Mark, the line's really bad. I appreciate it, though. Thank you very much for calling in from Rome. I was in Rome. It was lovely. It's amazing how old things are there. I mean, it's the difference between we'll go to Edgar Allan. I'm going to Baltimore. So it's like, oh, we're going to Edgar Allan Poe's house. You go to, parts of the country where it's like, oh, this is 400 years old. You're like, wow, 400 years old. And then you get to the Colosseum. It's like, this is 4,000 years old. You're like, 4,000? Good God. Crazy. But I'm not even like, he's not going to break the record. I mean, he's not going to get 700 for sure. He's not going to get 755, and he's not going to go anywhere near Bonds. He's just not. He started too late, unfortunately, and he's been hurt too much. But he's as prolific a home run hitter. He's unbelievable. He's an incredible hitter. He's hitting 330. Like, it's just scary. Dave in Brooklyn, what's up, Dave?
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, buddy?
I have to. This is the perfect segue because regarding your last conversation with the last caller, he already has 600. He actually has about 609, if I'm not mistaken. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
No, walks. What does he have? 609 what?
He has
$1 million?
600. No. 609 incorrect strike calls by umpires. The most of any player since the StatCast era.
And, is it that many? 609?
Yep. He broke 600, this last month.
That's crazy.
Nobody is even close. The number two guy on the list, believe it or not, there's a Goldschmidt, Altuve, because he also has the height issue with the umpires. But they're not even close. They're like 200 behind him. So, I mean, this, it's funny. I mean, I know this is like a, I know nobody wants to talk about this. People just kind of want to forget about this. But it's like, it has depressed me as a Yankees fan to the point where I stopped watching Aaron Judge 5 years ago because I couldn't watch that on a nightly basis. So guess what? I missed the 62 home run season, didn't watch it. I haven't watched a game this year because every time I watch it and the umpires do that, It kills me.
Dave, you're not serious. Mm-hmm. You're not serious.
I missed the entire 62 home run season, and I haven't watched two games this year because of the umpires. That's what I did. I have to tell you what I did.
strictly on the judge part of their act, or just umpires in general and all the calls and the lousy umpiring in general?
No, because here's what I would have done if I was Aaron Boone. The minute I noticed this pattern, I would have taken the players off the field. I would have said, that's it. We're coming off the field. It would have made national news, and it would have changed everything. He should have done that in 2017. That's what I would have done.
Dave, well, a couple things. Ready? One, and I know what you meant, but Boone was not the manager in 2017. He was it was still Joe Girardi, so he took over in 2018.
Yeah, but that's not just good. That's not true. It was 2017.
Who?
Aaron Boone was a manager.
No, he was not.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't. Joe Girardi was the manager in 2017, Judge's rookie year. They went to the ALCS Game 7, and then 2018 they traded for Stanton in the offseason, and Boone became the manager. 2017 was still Joe Girardi. It's okay. That's fine. That's when Judge's career started, though, and that's when he had 50 home runs and won rookie of the year. You can't be, you aren't serious with me right now. I get your frustration. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I remember talking about it. I tweeted something about it. Like, it's ridiculous because Stan's the same height and he doesn't have the same issue. Like, it's not even like an easy, it's not even an easy, hey, everyone's 6'7 has this issue. It's not true. Richie Sexton was this tall, didn't have this issue. Stan's this tall, didn't have this issue. I have no idea why Judge consistently gets the low strike called on him. It's absurd. But you're telling me that while this guy was hitting 62 home runs and breaking the record and having a great year now, this great, you're passionate enough to call me about it at 3:50 in the morning, but you won't watch the games because of it?
I it depressed me that much that I couldn't even watch the games anymore.
Dave, I'm getting to know you now. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. You can't be serious. That stopped you from watching the games?
Okay, let me ask you a question, please.
It's frustrating. I'm frustrated by it, but I mean,
and I remember when
you can't.
I remember when. Yeah, I was just going to say. I remember when you tweeted about it, and I remember when you mentioned it on the radio, and I was very happy that you did that. I just want to ask you one question.
Yeah.
If Girardi or Boone had said, "We're forfeiting this game. Everybody get off the field." Do you think that would have changed things with the umpires? Do you think it would?
No,
have
not really. You think that because that means they're doing it on purpose or something? Like for whatever reason, like Judge gets these low strikes. I don't think they're out to screw Judge. And I don't think taking, you know, the only time I think the Yankees should have been taken off the field when they weren't was when the midges were all over Jabba Chamberlain in the 2007 playoffs against the Cleveland Guardians. Like, that's the Cleveland Indians at the time. Like, that's it. You think that they should have taken the team off the field because, that is fascinating. You're a fascinating guy. That's fascinating that something that minor, and I mean, it's an issue, don't get me wrong, and it bothers me sometimes. But because he gets the low strike, you need to pull the team off the field and you can't watch the games. You missed his entire 62 home run. You sound like someone who admires him, wants to watch him, and you can't do it because, I don't know, once every two or three games, he gets a low strike called on him. He's still hitting .333. It's not hurting him. That's dedication to an issue. That is extra. That is just expert level. You know, being triggered for lack. That's. I'm almost impressed. I'm impressed that you got turned off to the game of baseball. Because Judge gets low strike calls. It's mind-boggling. 888-808. I don't even think I should go back to another caller. We should just sit on that and ruminate on that. Like, there's a guy out there who is so bothered that Judge gets strikes called low that he won't watch. Because it makes him so depressed. His words, not mine. That's interesting. Don't worry. It's not worth it, man. Watch the games. Enjoy this stuff. Enjoy him and Soto going back and forth. Don't worry about the low strike zone to that level. It's just baseball. I mean, I'm frustrated by it, too, and they need to figure out something. I don't know why the refs continue to miss it. And like I said, it can't just be the height. It's not like we've never seen. He's not 7'10". Like, you know, he's 6'10". We have seen other guys be this tall. Richie Sexton was this tall. Stanton is pretty much the same height. We've seen tall ball players before. Nobody has been affected by the low strike zone. I don't know what it is. where he puts his hands. Like, I'm trying to figure out what it could possibly be, why it's so difficult for umpires to do it. But no, like, they're not doing it on purpose. Taking the guy off the field doesn't change it. Taking the team off the field doesn't change anything. It's what they think is a strike. That's why you need... we're going to get to robotic strike zones, because that's when that stuff will change. But don't let it bother you so much, man. It's just a game. Enjoy it. Enjoy watching this. Enjoy watching his 300 home runs already, faster than anyone in history of baseball. Enjoy watching Grisham come in on a ball that's clearly over his head that leads to the go-ahead run in the fourth inning, which I'm watching in replay. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come back. More of your calls. More Juan Soto talk. Yes, Juan Soto is a Yankee. Yes, he will be a Yankee. And yes, there's a way and a path for Steinbrenner to do it, even in this luxury tax era. And paying him more than Judge will not be a problem. 888-808-1019. We'll be right back.